Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about ginkgo in depth. It's a treasure for thousands of years, for hundreds of millions of people, and Dr. Karen Jordan will give us an in-depth discussion on that. Ginger helps relieve sore muscles, and more potassium and less sodium is linked with fewer deaths over more than a decade. And a lot more on health and healing, including a lot on taurine. Now, taurine is a very important amino acid. And I'm going to share in depth with you today how it can help create new brain cells, help prevent your brain from shrinking, and in effect promote new brain cell formulations. So that way you can live longer, especially the part of the brain called the hippocampus, the area of the brain most concerned with memory. So really important insights. Also today, we're going to talk about how now in the United States, in North Dakota, they have armed drones that are patrolling the skies. Marjorie Cohen, a very well-known civic activist lawyer, will give a short opinion. Also, in New York State, there is now a rebellion against standardized tests, and it's exploding. So, what about opting out of these tests? I'll give some insights on that. Also, we hear about how different parts of the world are going through challenges. We see all the refugees, over 250,000 showing up. And one particular scene is the little tiny baby on the ocean's beach drowned. And it horrified people, galvanized people's attention. Now, mind you, we have 25 plus thousand children die every 24 hours in the world. But all it takes is one very dramatic photograph to have everyone stop for a moment and say, what's going on? I'll give some thoughts on that. But at the same time, from John Quealy, is Gaza is nearly uninhabitable. The people controlling the Likud party and the Knesset under Netanyahu have succeeded. They have totally destroyed Gaza. We're talking about 1.8 million people living in what has been called the largest open-air prison in the world. Why aren't we in the United States, in our major media, having reporters go to Gaza, spend a week or two there, and see that side of the story so they can be more honest and accurate in their reporting? I'll share some insights. Also, when I did my film a year and a half ago, American Veterans Forgotten and Betrayed, it was based upon traveling around the United States and finding every state large groups of homeless veterans. The latest research shows that there's more than 900,000 military veterans officially pending applications for health care from the Department of Veterans Affairs. And that's according to the department's inspector general. He says it's a serious problem. You think? One-third of the 867,000 veterans with pending applications are likely deceased, the report says. So there's total, absolute chaos inside of the Veterans Administration. There are over a million vets who need care not getting it. There's nearly a million homeless vets. And yet at no time do we stop and ask ourselves, why are we putting these people in harm's way to begin with? We'll explore that. Also today, from our environmental segment, a bombshell report reveals that methane emissions are hugely underestimated. What does that mean? Why should we care? We should, because more than anything else right now, methane could cause a 1 to 2% increase in the next 2 years in temperature. If that happens, you can kiss goodbye agriculture, forest, and probably one-third of all the states in the United States. Rapid decline will come. Also today, we're going to hear from some other people, George Carlin, about all of our stuff, the power of empathy. And we have resurrected Ronald Reagan to give a little slap down to Donald Trump and the GOP. So we have a lot to share with you today. Oh, and did I forget? We have two scientists, one of the most respected scientists, Dr. Stephanie Seneff at MIT, and Dr. Anthony Samsel, an independent research scientist and formerly a consultant with the EPA, who have some brand new information that you have not heard anywhere about Monsanto's glyphosate Roundup, GMOs, and cancer and other diseases. We'll have an exclusive interview to show you one more reason why we shouldn't have GMOs. I've recommended ginkgo for as long as I've been a nutritionist because of its long and rich history. And I remember once I was going to appear on a debate, and believe it or not, back in the 1970s, early 70s, to appear on a national television, you would have someone like myself representing the consumers against some medical doctor, generally representing one of the front groups for big farm and big food, big agriculture. And let's say the topic were DDT before it was banned. We would be advocating for it being banned. They would be saying how safe it was, that it saves lives because it prevents malaria, and there's no science behind it. Same people who would advocate for smoking as well, by the way. And one of the producers, Alice Fennell, a multi-Emmy awarding producer and a really one of the most respected in the business over in ABC, she says, Gary, before you come on the air, do something that no one would expect. Research the entire world literature on ginkgo. Only use peer review studies. And then do the same thing with ginseng. And I said, why? And she said, because you're probably going to get hit with the fact you're not a medical doctor. Hence, you don't have the background. But that doesn't mean that you can't come at them with what they're not going to have as science. So I did. I took about a month. And every single day, because we didn't have computers then, every single day I go to Flower Fifth Avenue Hospital and I would look at the scientific literature on ginkgo and then on ginseng. And during this research, I was introduced to a scientist from China who gave me 5,000 studies, this huge book on just on Panax ginseng. And he said, that's just a small amount of the literature on ginseng. And yet I couldn't find anything in the United States because we weren't doing research on ginseng. And I found a lot of the ginkgo research was being done overseas as well. So I went into the debate, and once again, as you could expect, all these herbs, there's no science behind them, it's just a waste of money. And so I pulled out the science. And I started going through what ginseng does and then what ginkgo does. And for example, on ginkgo, I talked about the fact that it impacts the brain and memory, that a single dose of 600 milligrams of ginkgo extract, a significant memory improvement was demonstrated in a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled study using what is called Sternberg's memory scanning test. And the effect lasted for some time. And I said, you have nothing in medicine unless you have something you can show us now. But here's the actual study. And this study shows that 600 milligrams of ginkgo improves memory. Now think of all the people who have memory problems, why not use it? Another study on healthy volunteers was just recently conducted to investigate the effects of ginkgo extract on memory and psychomotor functioning. And in this randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled crossover study, they found that 50 to 100 milligrams in a single dose or up to 300 milligrams or placebo during the remainder of the test showed a substantial improvement also in memory. So clearly there's a whole lot of good that comes from memory and cognitive functioning, and especially more pronounced for short-term memory. And so all good. But there was a side effect. And the side effect in one very important study was that the animals lived significantly longer if they got ginkgo biloba than those that received a placebo. So clearly there was an anti-aging aspect. Then I pulled out this study showing it had antidepressant effects. And at that time, mainly women were using either lithium or Valium. And there's a lot of side effects once you get on these antidepressants. And one of them are tics, facial tics, jerking, the tongue darting out, your head twitching, your eyes blinking, where you can't control it. And the worst of them were Thorazine. And Thorazine should never have been used on anyone ever. It was such a fraudulent drug. And people develop permanent tics, and a high percentage of people have permanent tics. So using natural antidepressants that have been used in Japan, South Korea, and China, and India for thousands of years didn't seem to occur to Americans because they wanted the science first. Well, the science was there. We just weren't paying attention. And because patients treated with ginkgo extract for cerebral insufficiency often showed general mood improvement, it made sense to take a closer look at the antidepressive effects of ginkgo. And so a group of scientists conducted a study. The ages were 51 to 78 years of age, and they had to have had clinical depression diagnosed and treated for a period of time, but were not responding to the antidepressant treatment. So they were given either a placebo or 80 milligrams of ginkgo three times a day. Well, after 8 weeks of treating, on the Hamilton Depression Scale, there was a huge drop from 14 to 4 in the ginkgo-treated group and none in the placebo group. So the takeaway message, ginkgo really helps people with depression. But then it got better. Their people have leg cramps, and hence they have a reduced walking capacity, generally due to atherosclerosis in the arteries of the legs, and claudication, intermittence, which occurs in a lot of the people in the United States. And as a result, they have a hard time exercising at all. Well, it turns out that this all causes your blood flow and oxygen delivery to the muscles to be diminished. And without oxygen and blood, you go into cramps. And that's why a lot of people have cramps. Well, ginkgo biloba extract was found to be incredibly important for helping with peripheral vascular conditions and hence lessening the cramping. And then it was shown to be good for your heart. In fact, heart attacks being the number one cause of medical deaths outside of medicine itself in this country, and the orthodox approach mainly using statins just don't work, but lifestyle modification does. And in one vivo study, ginkgoloid B infusion suppressed arrhythmias, which is irregular heart rhythm caused by ischemia. And the antiarrhythmic effects of ginkgo in the form of ginkgoloid B was comparable to standard antiarrhythmic drugs, but without any side effects. And the cardioprotective mechanisms of ginkgo extract were demonstrated in several other experimental studies. So there's lots of studies in the scientific literature showing ginkgo is good for your heart. It is an antioxidant, and it improves your circulation. So think of the people who need a better circulation, most people. And the main reason why ginkgo biloba has such a broad variety of effects on the body is that it makes the whole circulation system more efficient. And by improving both the elasticity and the tone of the blood vessels, it enhances the blood flow. And ginkgo is unique because it affects all parts of the circulatory system, your arteries, your veins, your capillaries, and is therefore a trivasoregulator. is able to harmonize the total function of your circulation. So it is a relaxant to spasms, and including in the arterial wall. It increases capillary perfusion without increasing capillary permeability, thus preventing edema. It enhances venous tone, which are the veins, and mobility, and thus supports the return of venous blood coming back up from your feet to the heart, and helps clear toxic metabolites that accumulate in the tissues when oxygen supply is insufficient. So we got to start considering how important ginkgo is. It's wonderful. And I was asked about NAD. NAD is right up there with L-carnosine and PPQ and resveratrol and grape seed extract. It is an anti-aging nutrient. N stands for nicotinamide, and A stands for adenine, and D stands for dinucleotide. And it's found in every cell of your body. It's essential to life. And what NAD does, it enables the transfer of energy from the foods we eat to vital cell functions. It's also required to turn off genes that accelerate degenerative aging processes. And normal aging is accompanied by a noticeable increase in fatigue and loss of motivation, and the tiredness we outwardly feel reflects inward impairment of cellular functions critical for sustaining life. And as NAD levels decline, mitochondrial function is impaired, resulting in fewer mitochondria surviving. So this vicious cycle of mitochondrial depletion results in many of the physical symptoms of aging: slowing down, getting tired, not being able to exert yourself. So definitely supplement. You can use sublingual lozenges or take the tablets, but add NAD to your anti-aging arsenal. And finally, ginger helps relieve sore muscles. The Journal of Pain, the peer-reviewed journal, a Professor O'Connor, University of Georgia's College of Medicine, compared the effects of daily supplementation with ginger or a placebo in two double-blind clinical trials. And they gave 2 grams, which is a small amount. It takes 28 grams to make an ounce. So you're dealing with a very, let's say, a quarter of a teaspoon of ginger juice. So it's not a lot. Or a placebo for 11 days. And what they found was that there was less pain, greater arm strength, range of motion, and a prostaglandin E2, which is a mediator of inflammation. So you have less inflammation, less pain, greater recovery when you have ginger. So one of the reasons I suggest people in the morning have ginger, 2 ounces of ginger with 2 ounces of lemon juice. And you can put that in a 16-ounce glass of apple juice. And that's a great tonic, and it's rich in potassium. And by the way, you want potassium. You don't want a lot of sodium. You want high potassium. According to the Archives of Internal Medicine, a team from the Center for Disease Control and Harvard School of Public Health report that having a lower sodium to potassium ratio associated with a reduced risk of dying from any cause over a 15-year median period. They studied 12,000 adults enrolled in the third National Health Nutrition Examination Survey linked a mortality file. And what they found was people need potassium. There's your coconut water and bananas and supplementation. And everyone who has cancer, you should be on high potassium, low sodium. I'm Gary Nall, talking about the issues that make a difference in our lives. Now, from our environmental segment, we know that CO2 pollutes, and we also know it causes global warming. But it is way less than methane. Now, methane comes from cattle, in fact, all animals. So when we start giving up eating animals and go to a plant-based diet, we're helping our health, but we're also saving the planet. But that's small compared to where we have an enormous amount of methane, and it's stored under the ocean. It's stored in these giant places in the tundras, in the steppes, in the high forest, the boreal forest of Canada and Russia and the Himalayas, and it's underground. It's when the ground is frozen for thousands of years, you don't see anything. Same way with the ocean. When it's really cold and you got a lot of ice, you don't see it. But when the ocean warms and the forest warms and the soil warms, then underneath is a huge amount of methane. Huge. And according to the latest study in energy and science engineering, a report from Lauren McCauley, quote, the amount of methane being leaked from natural gas production sites has been hugely underestimated, according to a bombshell new study released this week. In a paper published in Energy and Science Engineering, experts and gas industry consultant argues that a much-heralded 2013 study by the University of Texas relied on faulty measurement instrument and causing its findings to lowball actual emissions raised, quote, by a factor of 3 to 5. That's huge, by the way. And now they're saying that all these hydrofracking places, well, we were told that methane wouldn't be released. Now we're finding out it is in large amounts. So we have cattle that we can control. We can get off all meat. We don't need meat. We don't need to eat anything from an animal ever in order to be ideally healthy. In fact, we're going to be far healthier if we make healthy choices on a plant-based diet than a meat diet. That saves the planet because of all the methane. Over 12 billion, with the B, animals are grown each year in the United States, 70 billion worldwide for human consumption. So that's one. Secondly, when we stop doing a lot of the forest cleansing, meaning cutting down trees to grow soybeans to feed to those animals, then those trees, especially in the great forest, the tropical forest of South America, they hold the temperature. Their carbon sinks. And some of these can hold 20 to 30,000 gallons of water per tree. So we're destroying over 100 acres per minute down there right now. So we're creating the desertification of the rainforest. Where it used to be lush rainforest, now you got desert. And that means it gets warmer. And that means you have worse El Ninos and worse heat, and you don't have rain where you need it. So you see, all these things make a difference. Because then it heats up the oceans, which allow methane to come out there. And now they're seeing tens of thousands of methane bubbles coming up in the Arctic. And now we are told that tens of thousands of hydrogas wells around the United States, yeah, they're leaking methane. And they're leaking it close to where people live. And that's dangerous. So that's the latest on the environment. We're going to take a break and come back. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. Let's go now to our guest standing by. We have two, Dr. Anthony Samsel an independent research scientist on public health issues. In the past, he was a research chemist for Arthur D. Little and has consulted with JBF Scientific and US EPA. In recent years, he's focused his independent research into the adverse risks of agricultural chemicals, particularly Monsanto's glyphosate, or Roundup, and published his findings in collaboration with Dr. Stephanie Seneff at MIT on its relationship to cancer and other diseases. Their collaboration has produced three research papers published in the journal Entropy on the Roundup cancer relationship, and a fourth paper will be published this month. And joining him from Cambridge, Massachusetts, is Dr. Stephanie Seneff, S-E-N-E-F-F, who's a senior research scientist at MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory. She holds 4 degrees from MIT, including degrees in biophysics and a PhD in electrical engineering and computer science. She is a fellow of the International Speech and Communication Association for Research in Human Auditory and Language Processing and has published more than 170 scientific papers during her career. In recent years, her research has returned to medical and health issues and micronutrient deficiencies and the negative health consequences of aluminum, glyphosate, and statin drugs, including their relationship to Alzheimer's and autism and adverse vaccine reactions and other illnesses. Her website is people.csail.mit.edu/SENEFF. Nice to have you both with us today.
Hello. Happy to be here.
Thank you. I'd like to begin with you summarizing for us, and in whatever detail you choose, what you discovered after you had a chance to review Monsanto's safety studies on glyphosate herbicide, better known as Roundup, which were provided by the EPA. And many of these studies have been kept secret and have not been reviewed by many GMO opponents. And because most of the best smoking guns is always to show how an industry's or a company's own studies and research accuses its own product. So when Monsanto's own research proves that Roundup contributes to illness such as liver disease, then that is often stronger than independent outside research showing the same, and which the private industry can ridicule and attack more easily. So what does Monsanto know about the dangers of its own product?
Yes, Anthony, I mean, it's just been amazing what he's been finding, and we've documented a great deal of it in this new paper that's going to come out hopefully within a month. It's been accepted, and it's under, it's being prepared, proofs are being prepared as we speak. So we're very excited about this paper. And he's found really, I think, incredible evidence from the Monsanto studies of damage that was basically sort of excused away by some kind of hand-waving. And one of the things I'm sure he'll critically talk about is the use of historical controls, where you they found that when they compared against their own controls, who were rats kept in the same environment as the rats that were being exposed, they saw, you know, significant differences between the rats that were exposed and the rats were not exposed. And what they did to disregard those differences was to go back and find some other control rats in some previous studies, say back in the 1970s, I think, or even the 1960s, where the control rats were sick. And the control rats were probably sick because of something going on in the environment at that time. You know, it's not appropriate to have your control rats be at a completely different time, completely different diet. Nothing is control anymore, you know. And so I think that was a trick that they played to be able to dismiss some of the evidence. And the other thing he will talk about is the notion that the dose makes the poison. And this is something that the industry likes to emphasize, but it's not true. And it's become increasingly clear that these chemicals that act as endocrine disruptors are more toxic at low doses than they are at higher doses. And what Anthony suspects is that they did an experiment in which they had glyphosate at low doses, and the low doses had more toxicity than the mid-range doses. And they said, well, this is really bizarre, this shouldn't be happening, so let's just throw this data out, instead of saying maybe the low dose is more toxic. And then since then, according to Anthony, and I haven't confirmed this, but he says they have not done any further studies since then at those low doses. So they always start at a higher dose, and they make the assumption that if you bring the dose down, it won't be worse. But that assumption is false. And they and he thinks they know that the assumption is false, and that's why they don't do it.
One more question, because we have Anthony back, and we'll go back to him in a moment. One of the biomolecular mechanisms that is being ignored, not only by advocates of genetic engineering, but also the proponents of vaccination, is the role of CYP enzymes, or cytochrome P450 enzymes, which are critical for our body's means to detoxify chemicals as well as other molecules such as fats. Why is it so important for us to understand the role these enzymes play in order to understand the adverse causal factors of Roundup herbicide, as well as other pesticides that are found frequently in the food and food products we consume?
All right, so are you asking me that?
Yes.
Yes, okay. I mean, so Anthony and I, of course, have written a great deal about the CYP enzymes, and there is evidence, certainly from rat studies, that glyphosate was compared to several other chemicals, and it came out by far the worst in a rat study in terms of suppressing CYP enzymes in the liver. We have an epidemic right now in vitamin D deficiency in this country, and the CYP enzymes in the liver are needed to activate the vitamin D, and it's the activated vitamin D that's being tested. So what I think is the vitamin D deficiency epidemic is a consequence of a chronic glyphosate exposure to pretty much the entire population of this country, because you're absolutely very, very difficult to avoid glyphosate if you live in this country. And I should say that, by the way, that the U.S. consumes 20% of the glyphosate that's sold in the world, and we have only 5% of the population. So we have an extra burden of glyphosate exposure in this country. And then the CYP enzymes, of course, are also important for activating, for detoxing many other toxic chemicals. And so what happens is when the CYPs aren't working because of glyphosate, all these chemicals become much more toxic, including something like Tylenol. Tylenol depends on CYP enzymes to be broken down. And in fact, there's papers that have been written proposing that Tylenol toxicity is playing a role in autism. And so if you're taking Tylenol, you get a vaccine, you run a fever, you take Tylenol, and your liver can't break down the Tylenol because of the lack of the CYP enzymes, and the Tylenol then can become toxic. So breaking down drugs, breaking down other kinds of chemicals that are in the food, you know, the insecticides, the phenolic compounds, the PCBs, you know, all these toxic things that we have in our environment, many of these depend upon CYP enzymes to be detoxified.
One just follow-up issue then. In addition to glyphosate or Roundup, there's also a metabolite known as AMPA.
Right.
What can you tell us about this molecule, and are there any known health risks AMPA poses?
And I think you might be thinking of a different question, but I will answer first AMPA, and then I'll extend that, because AMPA is a breakdown product of glyphosate, and I think Anthony will agree with me that it's probably just as toxic as glyphosate is. So you don't solve the problem by breaking it down to AMPA. But you might be thinking of PEOA, and Anthony can correct me if I've got that wrong. And I never remember this thing, polyethoxy. It's a complicated compound. Amine is the last word. I think Anthony can probably tell you the name of that molecule, but that is added to the formulations as a surfactant. And it's been shown that adding that makes the glyphosate much, much more toxic to the plants, to the weeds. And one of the things that's very frustrating to me is that the EPA has allowed them to add whatever they want, it seems like, to the active ingredient, and to call all of those other things inert, even though those things have been shown to be toxic in and of themselves, because they break down the cell wall. They allow the glyphosate to get inside the cells in the plants, but also in our cells. They allow it to get in and do its damage. And so when you add glyphosate to these surfactants, you get a much more toxic mix. And they've also been putting in salts. They have glyphosate salts that they introduced probably around 2005-2006 time frame. And the salts allow them to have much higher concentration of glyphosate in the product. But also, I think the salts are also contributing to increased glyphosate's toxicity. So all of these things are making it more toxic than it was in the environment in which they tested it and got the approval way back in the 1970s, 1980s.
Okay, thank you. Anthony, back to you.
Yes.
Summarize for us what your research discovered that no one else was aware of about what Monsanto was doing, finding, and then not sharing with the world community.
Well, When Monsanto originally applied to get glyphosate, the active ingredient in Roundup, registered for use as an agricultural herbicide, they hired a number of contractors, and they also did some in-house testing, submitted reports to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency in order to secure their approval and green light the herbicide to market. At the same time, they asked that all of the studies that were done on animals, they asked that they would be sealed and marked as trade secret property of Monsanto Corporation. So all of the studies saw the EPA's eyes, and the people who sat on the committee and approved the chemical, but no one else could see it. The public review process was actually violated, in my opinion, as no members of the scientific community or the public could see the documents that Monsanto submitted to get glyphosate registered. All they could see were the summaries that the Environmental Protection Agency wrote, their opinions and what caught their eye in the Monsanto studies. Monsanto did conducted numerous studies in long-term studies, I might add, of 2 years in mice and in rats, several studies with Sprague-Dawley rats, the same rats that Gilles Eric Seralini used in his study that they derided. They also did studies in beagle dogs, in rabbits, and lots of lower life forms. Their results were all dismissed in every single study consistently. When they had positive confirmation that that a particular disease or condition was compound related, they brought in historical controls from unrelated scientific studies that perhaps were corrupted and in error themselves. And they brought those studies in, and they used the historical controls of those studies to negate the findings on the glyphosate studies. So it was like, why do those studies to begin with? It's a practice that really should be banned in science. They still bring in historical controls.
Well, there's a reason. There's a reason why I ask you this. Your recent series of papers on glyphosate and cancer have raised a considerable amount of alarm within the pro-GMO community and its minions, which puts it on par with Dr. Seralini's study in France. For listeners, Dr. Seralini is a French scientist who performed the same safety studies using GMO maize on rats as Monsanto had performed, but for the full lifetime of the rats rather than instead of the 90 days Monsanto only reports on. The results show that the GMO-fed rats produced a variety of tumors and cancers after 90 days. And shouldn't this raise a lot of concerns about the foods we feed our pets, particularly dogs and cats? And when our pharmaceutical companies perform research on new drugs or vaccines on rodents and other animals, aren't all these animals being fed GMO diets? And how might that affect the clinical results about the efficacy and safety of these drugs? And also, lastly, did Monsanto do a long-term study that none of us have known about, not Jeffrey Smith, no one in the field, that actually showed devastating effects or deleterious effects in their animals in a long-term study?
The answer to that is a simple yes. They have multiple studies where they showed deleterious effects, multiple adenomas and carcinomas in their study. And, you know, like I said, they derided poor Gilles Eric on his study, told him, oh, well, you used the wrong rats, you didn't have enough animals. Well, when you look at Monsanto's studies, they were, I mean, Gilles virtually duplicated what Monsanto did, and I mean, they sealed the results so that no one could see and make comparisons.
But you got a copy of that, didn't you?
I have a copy of all Monsanto's secret documents. I have over 15,000 pages.
How in the world do you have 15,000 pages of secret Monsanto documents, and the entire scientific community is still listening to Monsanto say that its research proves that GMOs are safe and glyphosate, the herbicide, is not a problem?
Well, it took me some time to get them. I applied under the Freedom of Information Act, and the EPA denied me. Then I went through my U.S. senator here, and Jean Shaheen, and asked her office if they could help me retain documents. And what happened was the Environmental Protection Agency had to send a letter to Monsanto to ask their permission, or rather to ask why my eyes should not see those documents, or why I should be prevented. I don't know what transpired, Gary. All I know is that the EPA sent me a letter, and they said that they gave Monsanto like 30 days or whatever to show just cause, and at the end of the 30 days, if they didn't show justification, that the EPA would give me the docs. And that's what happened. It took 4, 5, 6 months before I got them, but I finally got them. And then I got multiple documents after that. So I believe I'm probably the only researcher on the planet that, other than the Environmental Protection Agency, that actually has all of the documents.
And yet you're attacked by Huffington Post and David Gorski and some other people, and yet you have the actual documents. No other human being on the planet outside of Monsanto has seen. So I'm going to keep quiet and allow you. I'm going to tell our affiliate stations around the world, we're going to go a little longer today because this is historic. We need to know this, and we're going to put it on the record right now exclusively. So tell us what you found in those thousands of documents that we should be concerned about, that possibly even rises to the level of asking for congressional hearings.
Well, what I discovered reading all of those documents is that I believe that Monsanto misrepresented the data, that they deliberately covered the data and so that they could bring the product to market. They found statistically significant compound-related damage to the kidneys, to the eyes, to the lungs, to the testes of male animals, to the pancreas, to the liver, to the adrenal gland, the pituitary gland, the thymus gland, virtually every gland and organ was affected by glyphosate, and there were numerous adenomas and carcinomas, and they even detailed what those carcinomas were, the particular types. I'm looking at one of the tables from our new paper on glyphosate and cancer, which is supposed to be released sometime this month. It just passed peer review, and they're readying the document for publication, and in that paper, we disclose some choice data from multiple Monsanto studies. What I'm looking here at shows that there was interstitial cell tumors of the male testes of the rats, and there were no interstitial tumors found in the control. In the low, mid, and high dose, they found incidents of interstitial cell tumors. Now, the dose that were given to these animals, these rats, in the first study that was published in 1981 and given to EPA, They had a dose of 3 milligrams per kilogram per day, 10 and 30 milligrams per kilogram per day. These were the lowest doses that Monsanto tested, and they found positive compound-related results. And like I said, the results were dismissed through the magic of using historical unrelated controls to negate every finding. I'll just quickly go down the list. They found adenomas and carcinomas in the pituitary gland of male rats, a gliomas in the brain, reticulum cell sarcomas in the heart. Glyphosate does a number on the lungs, and Stephanie and I are currently working on a fifth paper that involves interstitial disease, and we're covering the lung specially in that paper because Monsanto found glyphosate caused a lot of effects in the lungs. They found sarcomas, reticulum cell sarcomas, malignant mixed tumors of the lung. They also found mandibular, in the mandibular salivary gland, they found reticulum cell carcinoma. In the lymph nodes, they found metastatic fibrosarcomas, reticulum cell carcinomas.
I'm going to ask you, hold on 1 second.
Sarcomas.
Anthony, I just need you to hold your thoughts for 1 second.
Okay.
For our sister stations around the United States, I realize you have to go to your next program. People can continue to listen for the next several minutes till he finishes this laundry list of diseases and illnesses that were shown by Monsanto's own hand that this man is the exclusive bearer of these truths. So we want to get this out. So you can go to progressiveradionetwork.com or prn.fm, continue listening live over the internet, or you can continue listening over the telephone. And the number to listen to over the telephone is you'll dial 712-775-6850, 712-775-6850, 712-775-6850. Now, so we'll say goodbye to those stations. Please continue.
They also found in that study, the Lankus and Hogan study of 1981, they found a reticulum cell carcinoma of the prostate gland. They found papillomas of the urinary bladder. They found C-cell carcinomas of the thyroid gland. Parathyroid gland had adenomas. The adrenal glands, they found reticulum cell sarcomas, cortical adenomas. The skin, they found basal squamous cell tumors, sebaceous gland adenomas of the skin. They found, let's go to the female animals of that study just quickly. Same thing. They found sarcomas of the lung, of the liver, of the pancreas. They found malignant lymphoma of the thymus gland, of the stomach, the colon, urinary bladder, the ovaries, uterus, thyroid, parathyroid, adrenals, mammary glands. Interesting is that it also attacks the eyes. It causes cataracts. And there's a tremendous increase in cataracts today.
This doesn't surprise me, by the way, because remember, Anthony, I don't know which of us found that article, but there's an article that suggests that sunlight exposure, glyphosate reacts to sunlight by becoming more toxic.
By the way, one moment for Utrice Leeds audience. Utrice's program will follow immediately after this, but this is historic information. This is exclusive information. We need this information because I'm sure a lot of people will now start to look at the choices they're making using anything sprayed with glyphosate. Please continue. And then I'd like for both of you, and Stephanie, I want you in this also, contribute anything you believe will address the following. First, how frequently are people consuming glyphosate in the foods their pets, their dogs and their cats. Mm-hmm. And also, since we've been told by the administration, by the Health and Human Services, USDA, FDA, that there is no relationship to glyphosate or GMOs and adverse health, you're all citing their actual, the company's own actual documents. This is like lying before Congress when the seven major heads of the tobacco industry said they didn't know of any addictive qualities. They were all lying, and they all had to pay hundreds of billions of dollars collectively to Medicaid for reimbursement. So what do you believe should happen with Monsanto for having kept this information that they consider proprietary but damaging public? So please continue.
Okay. I should also note that besides all the adenomas and carcinomas that they found in mice and rats, everyone will be able to view that that select data when our new paper comes out. I'd like to say that Monsanto claims that glyphosate does not bioaccumulate. I'm sure you've read that, and
yes,
and you've heard that from others. Well, that's false. That's just outright false, because Monsanto did another study where they radio-labeled glyphosate with carbon, radioactive carbon-14, and they gave a 10-milligram dose to seven groups of animals, male and female animals, and they studied those groups. They did intravenous, and they also did oral dose by ingestion. The intravenous dose, they sacrificed those animals at the end of 24 hours. They put them in a special tube, sealed tube, so that they could measure the exhaled carbon dioxide, and they found that there was a radioactive carbon-14, the glyphosate going to the lungs and being exhaled. They found glyphosate in all bodily fluids. Glyphosate occurs in lymph fluid. It occurs in blood, urine. It also occurs in the cerebrospinal fluid. What they found is that that glyphosate does bioaccumulate.
It goes into the bone marrow, Anthony. I'm sure you
yes,
mentioned that.
I'm looking at the table that we put in our paper right now, and it goes primarily to the bone marrow, to the bone and bone marrow.
They
recorded
significant
30 parts per million in the bone, and four parts per million in the bone marrow. They also recorded it in the blood, plasma, red blood cells, whole blood, in the thyroid, the testes, the ovaries, the brain, the eye, the heart, the kidney, liver, lung, spleen, uterus, stomach, small intestine, colon, in the abdominal fat, testicular and ovarian fat, abdominal muscle, shoulder muscle, in the nasal mucosa, and the tail and residual carcass. One thing I noticed in reviewing all of that data and all of the bioaccumulation that they recorded, they left out the pancreas.
Mm-hmm.
And
highly
I think it was deliberate.
I do too.
Because they meticulously recorded the amounts that they found in all of the animals that they assessed with radio labels carbon 14 laced glyphosate, but there was no data on the pancreas, and we know that there's a problem with pancreatic cancer today, huge problem.
In exactly
some of the other animal studies, we talk about, in our new study, we talk about pancreatic islet cancers and adenomas. We reveal.
Echinar cells, A-C-I-N-A-R.
Yes.
There's a lot of stuff on the pancreas. I mean, it's very interesting. And, in fact, we're going to, in our new paper, we're going to, I think it's going to be a pancreas and then subsequently lung. issue, that the pancreas actually drives the glyphosate into the lungs, is a story that's emerging that we're working on in our new paper.
Stephanie, I'm going to let you have the final comments here because we are going to run out of time, and give us your perspective after being aware of this research, studying this research as a scientist, as a highly respected scientist who's at MIT and published many peer review articles, over 160. What is your position now on glyphosate, on Monsanto, and on the public health issue?
I think, first of all, glyphosate should be banned from the planet. I think, in fact, we need to return to organic, sustainable agriculture across the world. I think we need to get rid of the whole concept of chemical-based agriculture and the notion that we can simply poison the weeds and poison the insects as a way to grow food. If we don't do that, we're going to have the rest of the world is going to catch up with the U.S. Right now, the U.S. has by far the most costly healthcare system on the planet, and we don't get buyback on all the money that we spend. We have so many people who are very sick in this country. We have all the autism and the Alzheimer's and all the stomach, you know, all the gut problems and the kidney failures. I mean, we have a lot of problems in this country, and all of these, there's many, many diseases that are going up in frequency exactly in step with the increased use of glyphosate on corn and soy crops. And there's a couple papers that have shown a lot of these plots of different diseases, both in the infants and in the general population. And several of the cancers that Monsanto found evidence for in their studies are going up in step with glyphosate, such as pancreatic cancer, thyroid cancer, kidney cancer, liver cancer, inflammatory bowel disease leading to colon cancer. I mean, there's many different cancers that are going up in step with glyphosate, and I think that they are explained very clearly by Monsanto's own studies. And then we're working, Anthony, on how to explain them. Are we out of time?
We're almost out of time.
And Anthony and I are working on how to explain them biologically, and it's making a lot of sense. And I really think the pancreas gets attacked. That causes trypsin to be released, which breaks open the artery wall and releases the toxin into the lungs, into the lung cavity, and you get this pleural tissue water retention in the lungs that ends up then infiltrating the lungs with glyphosate and taking them down. So you get a lot of lung issues like COPD and asthma.
You get interstitial diseases. Glyphosate causes interstitial disease, whether it's of the kidney, pancreas, lung. It destroys cells one at a time. It has many metabolites, not just AMPA, which is toxic. It also has MAMPA.
That's right.
And N-acetylglyphosate, N-formylglyphosate, and
the
real killer is N-nitrosoglyphosate. And that can form in the skin, reacting with nitrous acid in your skin and lead to skin cancer. So you can slather on all of sunscreen you want, but with that that metabolite N-nitrosoglyphosate, that'll give you all kinds of cancers.
So in my
skin cancer.
My final comment here is this: all of this information is in Monsanto's own research. Therefore, they hid this. For if I understand what you're saying, they hid this under proprietary notices. And hence, the public has not been made aware of this. So you are revealing what could be one of the largest public health scandals in history, leading to multiple diseases and deaths. I believe that at the very least, this deserves a full congressional hearing where all of the people involved come in under oath and have to explain this. Your final quick thoughts. We're out of time. Stephanie?
Well, Monsanto has hired a world renowned think tank. They didn't hire the one that I work for, Ottedy Little, but they recently hired another think tank to go through all of their studies and documents and give them a clean bill of health. They know that our study's coming out, and they're getting ready to defend themselves.
Okay, remember that 98% of all the people that went to jail or found guilty under Watergate were all Ivy League best and brightest. The fact that they can hire a high-powered think tank does not mean the truth is on their side, no matter how they try to manufacture it. Stephanie, final thoughts, please.
I just like to encourage everybody listening to switch to a 100% organic diet. Throw away the Roundup in the basement. Don't use it anymore on your weeds. Especially stay away from it if you're pregnant. You will be very happy with the results in terms of your family's health. And we practice 100% organic in this household, and I would encourage everybody listening to do the same.
Well, we appreciate Dr. Stephanie Senefeth, of the Senior Research Scientist at MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory, holding 4 degrees from MIT, including a PhD in Electrical Engineering and Computer Science, and a Fellow of the International Speech and Communication Association, author of more than 170 papers, and Dr. Anthony Samsel, a highly respected independent research scientist who had worked before with Arthur Little and consulted with JBF Scientific and also the U.S. EPA. Thank you both very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having us.
I'm Gary Nall. Sorry that we have had an extended version of this program. It's historic, what can I say? And hopefully this will lead the people in our audience and the lawyers in our audience to seek what could be done in the court system and before the media, because now the cat's out of the bag. We have the actual documents. They both have these actual documents, thousands and thousands and thousands of documents. So it's not he said, she said, it's Monsanto said, and we have the evidence, and therefore this is going to take a quantum leap forward. I suggest everybody today watch, it's free, Seeds of Death and on GMOs. And could you imagine how that film would have been different had we had these two people in the film, but we didn't know any of this. This was a world exclusive. Thank you all for listening. Now back to our regular scheduled programming and Nutrice Lead.